Dice Course. I'm Tyler Frater, alongside Richard A. the Cruz.
Hello, hello.
And Chief Engineer, Lieutenant Commander Connor for Raider, who is not here today.
Quitter.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Gaming Discourse. Go to our YouTube channel, YouTube.com/Gaming Discourse, Patreon.com/The Gaming Discourse. You can support us for $247, $10. Get your name in the video credits, early access to our videos, access to our Discord server, more stuff like that. Richard.
Gaming Discourse FM.
Name change pending at some point. But
you'll know when you know.
What are you doing anything special this week?
I've given up.
Okay.
No. So originally I was just like, the show was starting and it was just like, I'll just grab songs, songs. And then eventually it was about like halfway through doing that, it kind of became this like, okay, well, sometimes I will have episodes to where the mood just super whiplashy. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, well, let me just start maybe trying to do themes or putting stuff together. And eventually I started doing things like, Game of the Year episode or like Halloween. And
sure.
And then like last week was side scrollers and stuff like that. So this week I was like, well, let me do like shooters, like just like shooters.
Oh, awesome.
And I started collecting shooters. And then I realized like a lot of shooters have very ambient music. They don't necessarily have like
a lot of them. Yeah. I can name a few really good shooter soundtracks.
I'll get those after you or after the show. And one I was actually really hoping I would try to give was Half-Life Alyx, but I went through the soundtrack and I couldn't. It was a lot of ambient, super ambient. Yeah, and I was like,
it's a lot of ambience. It's a lot of, and like, it's like horror, I'm not, soundscapes.
I don't not like ambient songs. I do. It's just if you're sitting there and you want to listen to something while either, you know, working around the house or like working on something, I don't. And maybe it's more just a personal thing. I don't feel like I could work under music like that, because that type of music a lot of times makes you fall asleep. It doesn't really, you know.
Yeah, and there's no beat to it. There's no, you know. I think there's only like one song in Fall and New Vegas in Alyx that has like a beat, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think if there's really any songs in Half-Life, and I don't think, maybe the first one, but I don't think Half-Life 2 has any like big moments where the soundtrack ticks up.
I was kind of hoping to get a VR shooter in there, although I haven't tried Walking Dead. I think Walking Dead has a couple songs because it's New Orleans.
That one I don't know. I don't remember.
I'd have to listen to it. But about halfway through, I think I grabbed like 5 or 6 shooter songs, and then I was like, well, I'm kind of running thin, like personally, on like ideas and looking around.
Do you have any Halo in there?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, I was gonna say, because that's
well, yes, yeah. And then I was like, okay, well, let me try to do like like an offshoot. So it was like, okay, well, how about looters? Mm-hmm. Like, not necessarily shooter looters, but just looters, you know, because they kind of go hand in hand. So then I started trying to find.
I know. You told me to do this after the show, but Delta Force, which was like an old Milsim.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
It was like a knockoff of
Rainbow Six.
Yeah.
At the time, and Spec Ops.
Ghost Recon.
And, yeah.
That has a really cool main menu music.
It's Soldier of Fortune.
Bum, bum,
you know what?
Bum,
I haven't thought about. Wow.
Like Milsims?
No, I was thinking too much like 360 era and newer.
Oh,
I wasn't thinking PS2, Xbox. And now I'm like, oh man. Like,
it's a whole new world.
Yeah, Rainbow Six, Black Arrow, Black, Dark Watch. Yeah. What was one of my favorite shooters? I guess it's not my favorite shooter if I can't remember it.
Check out Delta Force. I think Delta Force 2 is the soundtrack I'm thinking of. Also, Medal of Honor Allied Assault. Really, Medal of Honor in general.
Yeah, Medal of Honor,
really
good. Great games.
But that's all. It's Michael Giacchino did, I think, the score for like the early 2000s Medal of Honors. Mm-hmm. And a lot of his work is heavily inspired by, at least I assume, because it sounds really similar to John Williams.
Mm-hmm.
So you hear Star Wars, you'll hear Indiana Jones in it.
Yeah, it's very
triumphant. Adventurous.
Yeah.
It's very, you know, it's very heroic, triumphant. You're punching Nazis in the face and going on this, you know, adventure excursion thing. So it kind of captures that spirit.
Oh yeah, Black Hawk Down, Delta Force. I have so many copies of this game in the store, I swear to God.
Yeah, and then Medal of Honor, or not Medal of Honor, Call of Duty Modern Warfare has some like really, not ambient, but not intense, like really simmering beats.
Yeah, usually when you get into firefights, that's when the music.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. Okay, what games have you been playing?
Speaking of shooters, I was sitting here, I was talking to my friends earlier about it, and I'm just kind of having a tough time playing games right now.
Uh-oh.
I can't decide what to play, just jumping back and forth. But one thing I did was thought to myself, you know what? I never ever, and I know you're going to like yell at me, I never got to play the anniversary of Halo 2, the Halo 2 anniversary. So I never got to play that, and I never got to see like the cutscenes and all that jazz. So I was like, well, let me download it, and I downloaded it. And I started playing it. And I got to tell you, it's a trope. It's a very common trope. But the opening sequence of the Arbiter being charged for heresy while Master Chief is being heralded
as a
hero,
is
poetry, man.
It's a magnificent contrast.
Excellent. Yep. Like I was watching these sequences happen, you know, and they just the pacing of going back and forth between them. I was loving it. It was awesome.
It's obvious what the game is doing, but it does it extremely well.
Yeah.
Halo 2 has some, I think, of the best moments in Halo, and I also think it has some of the more boring moments in Halo. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of gondola sections in that game.
Oh, yeah.
and I know the game, I think the development behind the game, there was tons of crunch, and it was incredibly difficult. And Halo 2 is famously what people say, it's the buggiest game ever. You just don't see all the bugs because they're in weird spots or whatever. So it's like a lot of those gondola rides, I wonder if they were just, we got to get you over here, and we can't make it too quick, so we're just going to brute force this thing. So you get 18 gondola sections.
Yeah, for sure. And I did get a little turned off when I was playing the game, though, because I don't know if, and it probably is the case, it has some performance issues.
Does it?
I'm playing on a 1X.
Okay.
And like the cutscenes weren't as smooth as I thought they should have been. Okay. And the subtitles were like 0.5 seconds delayed.
Weird.
So someone would already finish, like almost finish their line before the subtitles came up.
I don't think I experienced that.
So
I haven't played it. I have it on PC. I have the Master Chief Collection on PC and on my Xbox One. I don't think I experienced that when I played on the Xbox One or the PC. So
very, 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 very slight stuttering here and there.
Well, that's too bad.
It was just like, oh.
Those cutscenes are nice.
Yeah, they're very, very good. I started playing and it feels good. It feels good to play. I also have controllers are weird. And of course, doing what I do, I know this. But when I'm playing Halo, or the anniversary, very, very so slightly, I'm being my aiming is moving like left or right or up or down. But then like I'll switch over to Fortnite. Nothing's happening. So the dead zone is probably like
weird,
different.
Okay, yeah.
But like I have no, like I play Fortnite, everything's A-okay. But like when I was playing Halo 2 Anniversary, it was just very so slightly. And strange. I thought for a moment, I thought it was just the way that, you know, they kind of try to input, Master Chief is breathing, so of course he's going to be like, you know, or whatever.
Sure.
But no, it was definitely a drift, which is weird. If it's not happening in another game, I'm just going to overlook it and be like whatever, but
I don't know.
I'm gonna get back to it because it is fun to jump in and you know, I don't have too much I'm not heartbroken if I don't finish the Halo 2 Anniversary or anything like that. I want to get to it because I never got to it, but I can drop it at a moment's notice. You can be like, okay, pause, you know, quit, and then come back. So
yeah,
I was doing that. I'm enjoying it so far, but I moved over and I started playing a little bit of Dragon's Dogma 2.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Started that up, started playing it. I think I'm a couple hours into it, and I think I am a person who is in the middle of if it's not great and also very good.
Okay.
So
in a game with mixed reviews, you are the most mixed.
Yeah. I'm definitely a like mixed person because there's a lot that I like and a lot that I don't like.
Okay.
And the lot that I don't like is a consequence of I'm going to use the game that just came out, Eiyuden Chronicles, that it's a JRPG that's coming out.
Yeah.
this
reviews
week.
Reviews just dropped today, didn't it?
Reviews dropped, I think, yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Very average reviews, but one of the biggest, this game is pretty much a spiritual successor to an old JRPG from the PS1 era called Suikoden. Mm-hmm. And the mixed reviews are because it's too much. Some people complain that it's too much of a traditional JRPG.
Interesting.
Like the old PS1 era. Like, we've gone past the way it used to be. It should be.
Huh. Okay.
Like this. Dragon's Dogma has a lot of things about it that I get and I understand, but all of it can be done better.
You should watch. Does that make sense? You sound like, I know you're not the biggest fan mm-hmm. of Stephanie Sterling.
Sure.
Used to be Jim Sterling.
Yeah.
Check out their review, because what you're saying sounds a lot like what they said. Because a lot of the stuff that Dragon's Dogma made it like a cult hit back in the day.
Yeah.
Dragon's Dogma 2 seems to, and I played the first one a little bit. Sure. I haven't played the second one at all. But in their review, they basically said, yeah, it does all that stuff again, but it doesn't do a whole lot of it better. Mm-hmm. Or in like a different way.
Yeah.
And that's kind of seems like what you're saying, where it's like they're doing the stuff again.
Yeah.
But it's just the same stuff, not like any better.
Right, not improved. Yeah. And it's, you know, and that's not, that doesn't have to be a bad thing, mm-hmm. you know, because you want something to invoke a particular type of feeling, you will keep things the same. But if you don't want to have robust or abundant fast travel, yeah, there is fast travel in the game, but it's very specific points. But if you don't want to have that, you better make sure you have time. Because you have to walk very long distances to get to one place to another. Mm-hmm. Once again, which is fine, I don't have time. Like, I don't have time to do that. Also, if you are underleveled or maybe not the right vocation, I have to change vocations because I'm realizing now that, like, starting out with, like, a bow and arrow vocation is probably not the best.
Uh-oh.
Unless you decide to immediately get, like, a bunch of pawns. I think you can get 4 pawns at once. And so I only have 2 because I'm trying to, like, well, let's do this slowly because they do throw a lot at you. Because you will, you know, if you're traveling at night, barely can see anything, which makes sense, you know, in that type of era.
How do you see
that? There's a lantern. You have a lantern.
Okay.
On your belt buckle, but it,
I love,
you know,
those.
Of
I
course.
Love lantern.
Oh, yeah. And it's awesome, but it only goes, you know, yeah. only goes so far. That being said, though, it provides some very cool and frightening moments.
I'm sure it does.
Because you don't know where enemies are. You don't know when they can come out. And you don't know when bigger, worse things can come out. And that happened to me last night. And it was very scary because I was, you know, trying to run away. But if you're at that very specific distance to where your light barely catches their eyes and you see something through the trees,
that is creepy.
It's very cool, very creepy. Yeah. But if I'm halfway between towns and I die,
that sucks.
Too bad, you know. I didn't go all the way back to town, but I went, you know, far enough distance that I was like, oh, okay, like trudge through it, do it again. I just need time. If I had more time, I'd probably be okay with it.
Yeah, that's an interesting design choice. I don't know. I know there's the game takes time into when it comes to like a lot of quests have time limitations and whatnot.
Sure, yeah, they do.
So
yeah.
I don't know if their reasoning behind fast traveling and stuff like that was because they were afraid if players fast traveled and they would fail like 10 quests or whatever because fast traveling would make the clock go by real quick.
I probably would argue it's more or less they want you to try to like experience it as you would in that like kind of era.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does.
You know?
Yeah.
Like Kingdom Deliverance. Was very very realistic. You know, to an extent.
There aren't. Well, I mean, like in I don't know. I remember in like the early Assassin's Creed games, when you went outside. In a couple of the games, if you went outside the city walls,
mm-hmm.
There weren't any like guards or anything. It wasn't like Skyrim where there was tons of people on the streets everywhere. And there's farmers and there's Roman dudes patrolling. Mm-hmm. It's like you go outside the city walls and it just becomes the occasional person. Or Red Dead Redemption.
Yes.
And Red Dead Redemption does that for a specific purpose. But it's the same thing where you go outside a city, all of a sudden that NPC density drops and you don't see them as much. So yeah, maybe it something like that.
Yeah.
Make you feel isolated out on your own.
Yeah, just a bit for sure.
It's kind of a cool idea.
But it does, yeah, because there was a very early quest I did, and I should have... If you finish a quest and it's like, hey, you should go turn it in, because now I'm in trouble because I went to the next town and I have to go all the way back to the beginning area to finish the second part of that quest that I did. And so now it's like, oh, now I got to take this time to go there and do this and that. The controls are, there's a lot to do with your button, your control schemes.
Oh boy.
So it's like, I had a little bit of this, but I got used to it in like Shadow of Mordor. There's like, hold this button and hold this button and then press that one to do this thing. There's a lot of that. So
sounds like Rise of Ronin.
If you hold R2 or L2, it's like your interface has a whole new set of things to it.
Wow.
A whole new set of that to it. Once again, is perfectly fine because you need, but it's just, it's a lot to throw at you. So.
Yeah, sure.
So it is, hold L2 and press right on the D-pad to turn on your lantern, or, hold R2 and then press square to do your move. That's another thing. Your moves, if you level up, if you get abilities, you cannot do anything to your character until you go to a camp or an inn.
So you then, gotta find that.
Yeah, and then you can invest your points
into your characters. It's like Oblivion, where you had to go to bed. I think Morrowind may have been like that too, where you have to sleep to level up.
You level up while you're running around. You just can't, whatever points
to you put into your abilities.
Right. Which I did... But I didn't do the after portion, which was to actually equip those abilities to my... So I'm still stuck with, the first ability I have. So I'm here being very,
interesting,
open and naked, because I can only do, one thing, because I chose bow and arrow because I wanted to be different.
And now you're paying the consequences. Richard.
But it's not, it's not the game's fault. It's my own fault. Sure. But it's, because we have these systems in play now with games... we play currently, you take for granted actually having to go through the steps to do everything you need to. But the game looks good. RE Engine is stupendous, especially when it comes to facial animations.
Okay. So they've improved that, you think?
Because
when I
would say it's more for the first open world game using RE Engine, I think on average... character faces are very good.
Okay.
Lots of diversity too, which is cool. And I love having a lion dude with me, choosing your characters and stuff. That's very interesting. Choosing to have your having pawns, because you go to a stone and you get taken into kind of a plane of existence where all these pawns pop up and they're like, hey, choose me, and you can choose to hire them and whatnot. And I chose this level 40 person's pawn because she looked dope, and I was like, yeah, come on, and
join really cool.
me. I don't think she's as powerful when they come into your world, they're as powerful as you are, but still, it's really cool. I am continuously trying to give it a go. Not that it's bothering me or anything, but it's, once again, comes down to how much time do I have to devote to spending on trying to move forward and stuff like that. So,
yeah. What's a nice technique, I think, if you want to get through multiple games, is to find games that I think pair well together. Because I've been playing Pacific Drive. I've been bouncing between Pacific Drive and Rise of the Ronin.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really nice because Pacific Drive is really sort of it's relaxing, and then it gets chaotic short spurts, but then it goes right back to drive around, find resources, fuel up the car, whatever, you're good. You get back to your garage, you throw on the radio. Just
me, myself, at the end of the world.
Yeah, just me, my pony, my rifle, and me kind of a thing. And then you go to Rise of the Ronin, and it's just nonstop ninja action all over the place, which is fine. So it pairs well, which makes it good, because whenever I'm like, oh, God, I don't know if I want to fight right now, switch over to Pacific Drive. When it's ever I kind of feel like, cutting some dude's head off. Switch over to Rise of the Ronin, and I want to talk about Rise of the Ronin, and I want to talk about the Fallout TV show because I finished it. I won't spoil anything about the Fallout TV show, but I took notes because I wanted to better coherently convey my opinion on Rise of the Ronin, because it is a much more robust and longer game than I had any idea it was going to be.
Oh yeah,
okay. There's tons of romance options.
Really?
I don't know if Team Ninja has ever done romance options in a game before.
No.
But they're in this one, and it's kind of fun.
They do Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball, so.
I guess that's one type of romance. The game has gotten, I'm in Act 2. The game is seemingly pretty long. I'm in Act 2. The game has gotten better as I began to, like, figure it out. Because it's not your standard. It's very similar to Dark Souls, the combat, but the combat's also irregular at times. So there's a bunch of different types of weapons. You have katanas,
mm-hmm.
Dual katanas, spears, and like different types of spears. What's the sword that it's like a big sword, like a like, you know, with that's really wide and curves.
I forget what it's called.
Those kinds of swords.
Not a scimitar. Right?
There's something similar to a scimitar. Okay. There's like British swords. So there's all kinds of different weapons, and they all have different fighting styles, and they all have different special moves, and they all have different paces to them. So when an enemy has it, their attacks come at you in different beats.
Patterns,
right? So you have to learn those patterns. And so there are certain enemies. There's this baton that the Shogunate police force uses, and I can't time it right for some reason. I have no idea why. Even if it's like some random unpowerful enemy, he'll get a few shots in on me. I just can't parry it correctly. And then there's enemies with spears, and I can parry spears perfectly all day. Mm-hmm. So it's like just learning the beats and figuring it out. And the parry system is kind of weird because weapons also parry differently. Some weapons, it's triangle. You hit triangle, it's a quick parry flash and you're back to your stance. Some weapons, it's like a move set. Your character will swing their sword up and then down and take a few steps. It's like an animation that takes a few seconds, right? Which means if you mess up, you have a longer animation to get through before you can recover or something like that. But it also means like if an enemy attacks you twice really quickly and you correctly parry one of those attacks, the next attack may get through. It's kind of difficult to pin down. So, and the game says this, a good strategy is not to try and parry every single attack, because some enemies just have crazy rush attacks where they throw tons of attacks at you, and trying to parry all that's really difficult. So if you just block the whole time, you'll be okay. And so the game, it's like some enemies, I'll parry. Some enemies, it's dodging and rolling mm-hmm. and attacking when their guard is down or something like that. And that's just with your melee weapons. Then you have smoke, not bombs. Well, I guess they're bombs. Like a little ball that you throw, a clay ball, and you can load it with fire or like a flash bomb that stuns enemies. You have your bow. You can get rifles. You can get pistols. And all those things also change up your play style. So your pistol can disrupt enemies, can make enemies like a...
Stun them for
a second. Enemies will equip fire and like poison to their swords.
Sure.
And you'll see it, and the animation starts, and it takes like a second for them to do it, and you'll see right trigger on the enemy.
To interrupt
If you
them.
Hit right trigger quick enough, you have a grappling hook.
Oh, okay.
You can actually grapple the item and pull it, and then you get the item if you do it quick enough. But the grapple takes a second, so if you don't time it perfectly, they'll apply it to their sword. But the gun, because of how fast my revolver shoots, if you shoot them as they're applying it to their sword, it'll stun them and they won't be able to do it.
Got it.
So I usually just whip out my revolver and shoot them in the face while they're trying to apply something to their sword. So there's like all, and the enemies will, they'll attack you with a sword, and if you get far away, they'll switch to their rifle and start aiming at you. So you have to decide to parry the rifle shot, which can knock it back. Same thing with arrows. Or charge them and try to dodge out of the way and hit them and then force them to change back to their other weapons. So it's a really deep combat system with a lot of moves. It kind of reminds me of God of War Ragnarok. There's like a lot of moves that you'll forget about because you don't ever use them very much.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if you remember in God of War Ragnarok, there was like all kinds of like little tiny combat moves with each weapon that if you didn't use that weapon a lot, you'd probably forget about it. It's the same thing in Rise of the Ronin. There's... I have an ability where I can hop on an MP, like an enemy, and stuns them for a second. And I can like hop in the air and attack in the air and slam down on top of them. There's an attack where I can do an attack And then to switch weapons in Rise of the Ronin, it's you hold right bumper and you press up on the D-pad.
Okay.
That switches your equip weapon. So you hit square, and as your attack is landing, you hit right bumper up, and your character switches to their other weapon and gets another attack in.
Oh, very cool.
So it's interesting because if in the moment you want to change your swords, which is, you can do it really quickly.
Yeah.
But if you want to do it with style and you want to get another attack in, sure. Or like if you have your second weapon is a spear and there's a couple enemies around you,
yeah.
You can... Instead of just switching to your spear and then initiating the fight, you can attack one of them with your sword, switch to your spear. When your character pulls out the spear, they swing it around them, so maybe you'll get
another attack. Yeah.
But there's tons of instances like that where there's all kinds of little things that you just have to remember or drill into your head. This is how I'm going to fight. This is what my strategy is going to do. When I started the game, I thought it was more of an RPG, but it's more of an action RPG that... I was thinking there's strength, intelligence, dexterity, and charm.
Mm-hmm.
Are the four things that you spend your points on that give you different abilities. And I was like, okay, I'm going to spec into strength. But as the game has gone on, you get experience. You get the level up points from all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so it's not, you don't have to spec into a specific thing. If you prioritize certain weapons and armors, scale with different stats. So if you want to use specific weapons, it's good to focus on specific skill trees like katanas or the dual swords are strength and dex.
Okay.
So that's where I focused. So my strength and dex scores scale higher with the weapons do more damage or whatever because they're scaling with strength and dex. But I mean, I've also put a ton of points and charm and intelligence because you get a ton of points. So there's no reason not to do all of it. Even if you're building a specific fighter that uses specific weapons, they're still useful abilities in the other skill trees. So it's like eventually, if you play long enough, I think you could probably fill it all out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so as I've gotten better at like remembering what enemies do what attacks, what attacks to avoid, which attacks to parry, which weapons, which moves I like, it's actually gotten really deep and really fun. One thing I've started doing is I've tried to remember to apply poison to my weapons, but you can fire poison bows. So if there is a powerful enemy, I'll hit them with a poison bow before combat starts. That's so that gets their poison up, and then I'll apply poison to my swords. Hopefully I can get the poison going. Poison and fire.
Do they stack?
It works like Elden Ring or like Dark Souls.
Okay.
Where it's like, you have to fill up a bar. And once that bar is filled up, then you're poisoned.
Massive, yeah.
It's kind of like that. And then also like the stun bombs, you can be a fire bomb or a stun bomb. But the thing is, once combat is initiated, if you can only fight with the weapons you have equipped. If you go to the menu and try to switch your weapons, it won't let you.
Oh, neat.
So you have to sort of be prepared and know. So there are enemies that are way harder than other enemies, like not just because they're more powerful or they're mini bosses, but also just because they have better moves and stuff like that. So I try and remember, okay, is this a guy I want to just run up and attack? Because there are some mini bosses where it's like, I can parry this guy and just do my normal attacks and I'm good. Then there's bosses where it's just a flurry of attacks, so I need to stun them, I need to hit them with my bow, I don't really need my pistol, my revolver, because it's not going to do a whole lot here. It doesn't do a lot of damage, it's more about stunning and stuff like that. So I think it's actually pretty cool. It reminds me in some ways of Witcher, where it's like you're kind of, which sword do I need, which oil, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I am playing it on the highest difficulty, which I would, if you're going to play it and you're somebody that enjoys challenging combat or whatever, I would recommend like getting into it once you get the combat down, kicking that difficulty up, because that's when the combat, because it does a good job making everything, not just the game harder,
right,
but everything more meaningful.
That's cool.
Which is the kind of difficulty that I really like. Metro is the same thing.
Yeah.
What's another? Yeah,
not
game?
Just making
Witcher is the same thing.
Bullet sponges.
Exactly. So it's like all your little abilities matter more because you're looking for all those tiny advantages in combat. And I've gotten into some really, the boss fights are fantastic because a lot of the bosses, like the main bosses, have really unique abilities. So instead of encountering them out in the open world, you kind of just have to learn as you're fighting them. So it may take you a couple tries. But I've had boss fights go down to where it's like, I have a sliver of health, they have a sliver of health. So I just, you know, Doc Holliday my revolver out and just get a couple shots out, hoping that I'll take him down. I would recommend it. Should I say Val Kilmer my revolver out?
It appears Mr. Ringo is an educated man. Now, I really hate him.
Arguably, Val Kilmer's greatest scene ever is twirling the cup.
Yeah.
And he did that across... Oh, what's that guy's... What's that actor's name? Michael Bean.
Michael Bean, yeah.
Who was
Connor.
Corporal.
Not Connor.
In Aliens. Yeah. He was Corporal Hicks.
Yeah,
Corporal
he was Hicks and he was also Terminator.
In Terminator, yeah. John Connor. Or not John Connor. He was the guy John that Connor, yeah. went
Reese,
to save...
Kyle Reese.
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. And then, Fallout. I thought the TV show was fantastic. I think that is one hell of a cast. Mm-hmm. They cast it so well. We've talked about, now I can't think of his name, the ghoul.
Walter Goggins.
Walton Goggins.
Oh, Walton Goggins.
I think it's Walton Goggins. He is just so good as the ghoul. Because the ghoul, if you've seen, he's got a cowboy hat on. So the ghoul is very a Western type character. Yeah. And I don't know. If there's going to be another Red Dead Redemption, they just need to put him in and say, you know what you did with the ghoul? Just do that, but you're going to be a human this time.
Yeah.
Because he was so good. I don't remember the other... Aaron Maton is Maximus, who is the guy with the Brotherhood of Steel. He's fantastic. And then I don't remember... the woman that played Lucy, who is like the quote unquote main character. I should have wrote down their names, but all three of them were just phenomenal.
Ella Purnell.
Yeah. All three of them were just fantastic. Each character had started in a place, and then it's only 8 episodes long, which relative to television shows isn't super long, but they start in a place and they end in a different place, mm-hmm. which is really neat to see. They also have really odd things about their characters that aren't apparent, especially Maximus's character, because he grows up with the Brotherhood of Steel. So there are things that he doesn't understand about the world that you don't initially think about. And then later on in the show, when they encounter it, you're like, oh, yeah, he doesn't even know what this is like.
Yeah,
it's an interesting little tidbit into his character and how he's been raised, and the rest of them are like that as well. I can't wait for you to watch this show because it's so good. It nails the Fallout atmosphere. I think they did such a great job. You could take still images of the show and it's like, and put a gun in the right hand corner and it's like, oh, it's an image of Fallout.
It's cool.
So perfect in some areas. A very similar sense of humor. I told you this last week that some of the writing, there are a lot of like plot holes. I don't know if plot holes too generic of a term, but a lot of you can tell they wanted to do A, but they weren't sure how to get, or they wanted to do B, but they didn't know how to get from A to B, so they just said A happens. Now let's do B. They just sort of, you can tell they were almost like riding by the seat of their pants. There were some things that didn't always make sense, but it was so stylistic and so, and some of the dialogue is fantastic that I was okay with some of like the, this doesn't make too much sense, but okay. It's not like overriding. It's not to the point where nothing makes sense and it's really bad.
A lot of Fallout's like that,
I think. A lot of video games.
But I understand the difference when you create it into a visual.
A TV show.
You know,
and you're kind of waiting for consistency and stuff like that. Yeah. I have one, I don't know. It's unfully formed. My one major criticism of the show, and this criticism might be incorrect, is I think at the end, a villain has a speech. And I'm afraid, I think the villain is supposed to be wrong, but I'm afraid people will come away thinking that the villain has a point.
Yeah, of course.
When the villain doesn't have a point. Huh. I'll say this. There's a couple characters... This is a trope. I don't know if it has a specific name, but there will be a character in a show who does something evil. And you're like, whoa, they're an evil person. And then like later on in a show, movie, game, whatever, you find out that, oh, well, they're actually fighting for what's right. But at the beginning of the movie, they punched a puppy. So they're just as bad as the other guys. Yeah. That kind of thing, you know? Yeah. That kind of happens in Fallout. So I don't know. I'll talk more about it once you've seen the entire show.
It's like a solid as Snake.
Does he do something?
I mean, he's technically the good guy.
Is he?
He's trying to take down the Patriots, but
I don't even remember what was going on in Metal Gear.
No, because you're supposed to go take him down. But at the end, after you do it, it's like, oh well, shit. Actually, wait, no, he was the good guy.
Is that what he's doing? Oh, okay. I'll talk about it more. I guess once you've seen it.
Yeah.
The contrast of in Fallout, the contrast of the 1950s, the ink spots and Dean Martin and I forget whatever other singers, but with the desecration and the desolation of the wasteland, just perfect, just phenomenal. They lay it on you a lot. There's constantly new music every scene.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, that's Fallout, you're encountering music everywhere you go. There is a scene where a character is listening to a radio on their Pip-Boy, which is cool.
Oh, that's cool. That's neat.
One celebrity makes a cameo appearance that is just, it's such a perfect cameo appearance. And it's understated. It doesn't give it it's one of those cameos where it's just,
it just happens. It just happens. And then it goes on.
But then if you know who the actor is and what he's known for and stuff like that, it's clearly a joke about who the actor is.
Huh, okay.
So I can't wait for you to see, and I think you'll know.
I think I'm already maybe sussing out.
Okay, I think you'll be able to tell. I really enjoyed it, and I know there are people that have questions about the lore and stuff. I'm not as fluent with Fallout lore, and I've read up on it.
Sure.
It doesn't seem like there's any concrete answers as to what exactly. Because everybody says Fallout New Vegas is canon, but there's no, Todd Howard has said, no, everything's canon.
Yeah.
But there's still no, it seems like even though with Todd Howard saying that, it seems like there's still questions about how it works out. And so I don't know. Tim Kaine made, who was one of the creators of the original Fallout and Fallout 2 and worked at Obsidian for a super long time. He has a YouTube channel now, makes great content all the time. And he posted his review, and he was saying how much he loved the show and stuff like that. And his position on it was essentially that he called it lore drift, which was not a phrase I had heard until that video. But he said it was just inevitable, especially with stuff like Fallout. You're talking about a 20-year series with games, with all kinds of stuff in the games, and people making TV show. So lore drift is inevitable, and when you come up with a story, it's like, how beholden do you want to be to something that happened a long time ago, or little tiny things? It's not to say that it's not important, it's just you're kind of limiting yourself to certain things if you do that.
I also kind of had this weird thought, particularly with something like Fallout, because we think about what it is, post-apocalyptic, 50s Americana, and no one is nothing is connected really because of the instances that have happened.
How do you mean?
I mean, of course, there's radios and stuff for communication devices. Sure. And there's people. But it's not I feel for me personally, the Fallout lore, quote unquote, for me is all out the window. Who cares? I am fine that there are particular big moments. What year does this happen? But everything in between is whatever. Because if you were to tell the story of, the stranger in New Vegas, would somebody consider that an urban legend and just pass it on because everything is so it's, I don't know. To me, it's just not something that
and not everything in the games makes sense. Yeah. Makes logical sense because it's a funny game.
I saw this really crazy looking demon in the desert with huge claws and it's dude, whatever, shut up.
And that's actually a point Tim Kaine brings up because he talks about how, post-apocalypse, how do you know you have the right calendar? How do you know? So he's maybe you could write it that way. And I also think he just didn't think it was all that important. But I do sympathize because I am a fan of Halo. And so when you write a show and the Master Chief is not the Master Chief, I understand fans' hesitancy to letting go of lore because there definitely are shows and stuff where lore just get, think about Resident Evil where no movie has ever captured Resident Evil, I don't think.
The first one was the closest.
The first one was the closest.
But it's still wrong. But at the end of it, we all were like, okay, yeah, sure. Not bad.
And then it just went completely nuts.
But
and
that
then,
is, yeah, that
what's
is.
What's her name was kicking glass in midair. And
it was wild. But I think that is one of the, and you've already seen this opinion, but it is the correct one, I guess. But we have now seen the cause and effect of, or not cause and effect, but we've seen what can happen when you create a great show based off a franchise.
Yes.
That franchise becomes immensely more popular than what it originally was. I have been selling Fallout games like crazy.
I'm sure.
Thank goodness that game has sold very well that I have enough to supplement, to take care of it.
Yeah.
But how much could Halo have been brought back up from that
it's
TV
sad,
show?
Man. Oh, I didn't even think about that till right now.
Yes. Well, right. Yeah. And I just hope that we can get more out of the Halos, because Halo, you talk about the timeline for the Halo, but I think that there is a very specific story being told in Halo, so that timeline does have to be adhered to.
Sure.
Whereas Fallout is kind of you have a worldly situation that kind of affects everything, and it's not really
And the years are referenced in Halo, I think.
Frequently, yeah.
Yeah, whereas Fallout, you kind of have to find them, or they're in texts. Yeah. I don't know if it's like at the beginning of New Vegas, I don't think it's like New Vegas 2177. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't remember it being that way. But so, yeah, and that's just too bad. And also, like, Infinite's not very good. I don't want to talk about Halo right now. But yeah, I saw Paul Tassi tweet, who was a writer. I think he still writes for Forbes. He does a lot of Destiny 2 stuff. He tweeted out an image of Steam charts. Yeah. And it was Helldivers 2, and right beneath Helldivers 2 was Fallout 4.
Yeah.
And his caption was just, Phil Spencer is screaming at Todd Howard, get a new Fallout out the door.
Yeah.
Which is too bad. Yeah, because
Obsidian's hands are tied with both Outer Worlds 2 and Avowed. Yeah. You know, and Bethesda's doing Bethesda things.
Bethesda things. Yeah, we won't. I mean, the next Fallout's not going to be till after Elder Scrolls,
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because games are taking way too long now. Mm-hmm. We have to find a middle ground between crunch and 10-year development cycles.
And yet, New Vegas came out, I think, 18 months after Fallout 3 did?
Yes, because they only gave New Vegas like a year and a half or something.
Right.
But they only gave Obsidian a year and a half to make New Vegas.
But all the assets were there and stuff, so that helped.
And that's why it was also like super buggy, so they just didn't have a whole lot of time to work on it. Must have been hell. And it became the best.
Arguably the best one, yeah. I'll give it another shot. It's going to be like my sixth time playing it.
Get it on PC.
I have it on PC.
And try and see if you can find some mods.
I just hate the desert, man.
Yeah, the desert's scary. But see if you can find some mods.
It's boring.
Go to PCgamer.com.
Yeah, I got it.
You know, Fallout New Vegas mods. There's mods that are like take 2 hours to do. You don't have to do those mods. Mm-hmm. You can find the Nexus mod stuff, make things better, cleaner, you know, whatever. I think you could do it. And I feel the pull now because...
No, I'm waiting for the 25th for the PS5 update for Fallout 4.
So. Oh, okay. I have that on PC...
Whatever, dude.
I thought it was okay.
I mean, I like Fallout 4. I think I like it more because it plays so much better than the other ones.
It's more of a shooter.
But it is. Modernized. It definitely is, yeah. Although I cannot care about that story. Holy crap. Valentine, though. Put him in every game.
Synths have every right a human should have. I'm sorry.
Agreed.
Data is a living being.
He is.
Data is alive. Okay, we've gone 45 minutes. Anything else you want to discuss?
No, please, let's get to the news.
Okay, let's do news after this ad. Thanks for listening. If you like our content, please consider subscribing or leaving a like and comment. You can find us at patreon.com/thegamingdiscourse. And our tiers are $2, $4, $7, and $10 and include getting your name in the video credits, early access, and access to our Discord server.
We got a news story about how Phantom Liberty, the expansion for Cyberpunk 2077, has reshaped CD Projekt Red. And this is from Aftermath.
Yeah, Nathan Grayson.
Yeah. Yep. And in 2077's original launch was financially successful, but of course bad everywhere else. And there was lots of crunch in the lead up to the game's release. Since then, specifically with the development of Phantom Liberty, things have changed. Paul Sasko, I assume that's how you say it, a quest director on Phantom Liberty and associate director on the next Cyberpunk game, spoke with Aftermath's Nathan Grayson about how CD Projekt Red has changed and what it does differently now. And he said, quote, "Sustainability is incredibly important. To be able to, when you are finishing up a project, have a team in a state where they haven't been doing crunch for overtime or anything, that they are able to go into production of the next thing, which means delivering something earlier, which means having a product you can sell as a studio, which means having the money to sustain. That requires your production to be structured in a way where it does not require those spikes, those moments when there's suddenly an all-hands-on-deck approach," end quote. Sasko says CD Projekt Red now has pods, which is a group of devs from different departments all working on one specific element of the game and with a higher level of autonomy. For example, one pod will have a quest designer, cinematic designer, open world designer, writer, QA, environmental artists, VFX artists, and SFX artists all working on one thing, like Phantom Liberty's first quest. And then the directors review what the pod has made. Most of CD Projekt Red is now working on Project Polaris, the next Witcher, while the next Cyberpunk game is in the early stages and being worked on by a smaller team.
Yeah, so if you haven't checked out Aftermath, go check it out. Nathan Grayson, Geeta Jackson, Luke Plunkett, a lot of people that used to write at Kotaku.
Yeah.
They're doing really good stuff there. This story is really interesting because we hear about crunch and we hear about like the clinical diagnosis of crunch and what happens. But we've never really heard about, all right, how do we fix it? Mm-hmm. What are the nuts and bolts of like fixing that system? And so this is the first time that I've read a developer talk about, here's specifically how we're restructuring, like a little bit of inside baseball, how we're restructuring a development philosophy, a development studio in order to get things and make things smoother. So yeah. I thought that was interesting. But also, good.
Of course.
Because whatever decisions went behind Cyberpunk's initial release, a lot of the developers, I don't think, they didn't deserve that. I also don't think they liked that it happened, because mm-hmm. at the time, there were a lot of developers that I think, they were asking during meetings, like, what were we doing? Why did we release? And they were sort of angry, and I think they had a right to be. So, this is good. Hopefully, CD Projekt Red can sustain itself this way, not only because it's good for the workers, that's the most important thing, but also because they're a super talented studio.
They are, yeah.
And Cyberpunk had little bits of it that were legitimately innovative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way you entered and exit conversations, right?
Yeah.
You just walk up and you'd walk away kind of thing. If you're in a phone call with somebody and V gets interrupted, that's like the conversation will
resume after
yeah. And V's like sorry or says something to like bridge the gap between whatever interrupted the conversation. Night City is probably the most detailed and like dense open world city I've ever seen in a game.
I think so, yeah.
Like, I don't know. I can't think of another game that
I haven't played Cyberpunk 2077 for like a ton, like 20 hours ish, but I can still visualize how streets look, what people are doing, because it was so the attention to detail was there. Yep. But yeah, it's a excellent game, and I think that he's very, very much correct on having, it's important to have releases, whether they're big and small, to supplement the continuous working-ons of the larger games, because it is insane that we go 6 years between, you know, 5-6 years between what Spider-Man or whatever games, mm-hmm. and they have nothing to show for it when it comes out, or at least a lot less than the first time around. But the biggest issue is getting rid of crunch, and it seems like CD Projekt Red, although they tripped and fell pretty badly, they understood, oh, yeah, okay, let's avoid that next time. Yep. And they're at least trying to work on it. And yeah, they're being very transparent on what they're doing, unlike Ubisoft and oh, crap, we've had a couple of other studios, Rockstar a little bit and others. But it's very nice to see, very refreshing to see someone talk about it.
And I think, this is the kind of solution that I would because it seems like they're trying to figure out how to deliver the games they want to make rather than pivoting to, you know, live service or whatever, or trend chasing or whatever. I don't know if you would count Rocksteady as pivoting, because they started in 2017.
Yeah.
So that was like right at the beginning. When did Anthem came out? 2019, I think. So
was it 2019?
Was it 2019?
Anthem came out?
Or was it before then? It came out while... It was announced after we started this podcast. We started this in 2017, and Anthem came out like 2 years later. So maybe, unless my years are, which, you know, they could be, because the past 4 years have been one really long year. So I don't know. But anyway, what I'm the main point I'm making here is that at 2017, making the decision to do like a live service was right at either the peak or the beginning of the peak of like the live service rush, where everything was live service it was 2019. Everything was like live service, or it was battle royale or something like that, right? So yeah, you pivoted to that and it didn't work. So I'd rather have something like this, obviously. And I don't know. I think one question I would ask a developer of like Sasko's stature, somebody that is like a high level manager or whatever, is how do we shorten that time between games to the point where, is it reducing the scale of games? Is it reducing the technical complications of games? Because yeah, like Cyberpunk's 2077 sold incredibly well, but there's going to come a time when these games that take forever to make don't sell, when something like that happens.
Yeah.
And that's a massive, 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 massive investment that is going to fail. So even if you have that sustainable bridge into the next project where people aren't dropping out or leaving or whatever because of crunch, if that project didn't sell, then you have another problem on your hands, because the next project is... like, I think Bethesda is in a really tricky spot right now, because we're not going to get... the next Elder Scrolls till 20 years. We're not, right, until like 20, whatever it's supposed to be, 2028 or whatever, which is just ridiculous. It's only 4 years away, but that still feels like forever.
It does.
That's a freshman today is going to graduate before the next Elder Scrolls is out. So it's like that can't be something that large studios are starting to do with their games, where they have massive development cycles, right?
Right.
Because it's just not sustainable. So how do you accordion that back down? Not to the point where all the parts of the accordion are smushed together and you're right back to crunch, but where you can find that, I don't know. And I don't even know what a reasonable is, like a 3-year development cycle reasonable? I have no idea.
Yeah. It all depends on what you want to do as well, because we keep going, well, we're talking about Cyberpunk, so it makes sense to use Cyberpunk as an example. But we have talked about how robust and how memorable Night City is. And Project Liberty took place in another section of Liberty City that you were never able to get into in the first game, if I remember correctly. It's like on the bottom left of the map.
Are you talking about...
Phantom Liberty.
Oh, okay. You said Liberty City.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. Phantom
Liberty.
Phantom Liberty takes place.
We're talking about Wings of Liberty.
It takes place in a particular spot I don't believe you're able to get to. And yeah.
Yeah.
And if you create a world that people love, like Cyberpunk, like, you know, New York City and Spider-Man, I know that's cheating because it's a real city, but, I know there's another good place I'm forgetting that's like open world that people... Witcher.
Sure.
You know, Witcher.
Novigrad.
I know. That's another CD Projekt, right? How bad is it to ask for supplemental, smaller additions to those?
Yeah.
And I use Genshin Impact as an example. Genshin Impact, when the game first came out, you had your small nation of Mondstadt. But since then, it's been 3 years now. We now have attachments to those of other nations, of other places that you can go to, and those get released half yearly or yearly, and usually every two patches, which is every 2 or 3 months, you get at least a smaller chunk of new area. So if you have something like Miles Morales is another great example, you release a 8 to 15 hour game where you can have maybe 30 hours of content for cheaper, faster, reuse assets, reuse whatever. And you get that small bump in revenue, and your player base is happy enough to dive back in. Maybe you'll catch, you know, more eyes on your game that weren't there in the first place.
Yeah.
You have more bang for your buck. So there's lots of solutions, but
Phantom Liberty is the kind of DLC you don't see anymore. Because back in the day, it used to be called an expansion.
Expansion pack, yeah.
Medal of Honor Breakthrough was an expansion.
That was for the PC game, right?
Yeah, that was for Medal of Honor Allied Assault. There are other expansions that I can't... Battlefield 2 had a bunch of expansions, a couple of them.
It did, yes.
Where you would... You had to own the base game to get the expansions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Fallout 3 had a lot of big...
Operation Anchorage, yep. Pit.
Yeah, you know. Had a lot of big expansions like that. Nowadays, it's not called expansion packs anymore. They're called DLCs. But Cyberpunk is still sort of... At least CD Projekt Red has done their games in a way that you don't see anymore. Because you had Witcher, then you had the other expansion, then you had Blood and Wine. Yep. And Blood and Wine was big. It wasn't as big as Witcher, but it was bigger than the first expansion. I can't remember the first expansion's name. So maybe that's the way to go, is if you're going to spend a ton of time on a base game, then you make like a mid-tier. And I think if people really enjoyed that base game, especially with more people playing games today, with how games are more expensive today, with the availability of internets and downloads and everything like that, maybe that's easier to do now because you don't have to find a boxed copy or install it with a CD or whatever. You just get an update. And with the update, if you pay this much, you unlock this new zone or whatever. So maybe that is the future.
Yeah.
So instead of figuring out how to make, you know, one game every 6 years and hope that it sells good, you do a game every so many years and then you do a 0.5
mm-hmm.
and then you do two and then you do 2.5, mm-hmm. something like that. I guess we're just describing gaming in the 2000s,
yeah,
basically.
Yep.
So yeah, maybe that's the answer. I don't know. It would be good to have a round table of people like this that know, and ask them these questions. Not like, how do you do this in the game? I mean, like,
mm-hmm.
I want nuts and bolts economics. How do we get to games that aren't made over 10-year development cycles? How do we do that? Because that just does, and like Liberty City had a ton of DLCs, didn't it?
It had two. It had Battle of Gate, yeah. Tony, and Lost in the Damned, which is excellent.
Yeah, and I don't think GTA 5 had any single player.
They didn't.
Stuff.
No, they all got canceled.
Yeah, so it's like, and they all got canceled because of
online.
GTA fucking online, right?
Which the expansions were technically inside of online, yeah, but I don't want to play online
no.
to get to that. You know, yeah.
You want to have more characters and story and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Yeah. Anyway, okay. We'll move on. The crew licenses have been revoked and Little Big Planet servers have been wiped. Ubisoft pulled the crew from sale in December and said it's that servers would shut down in April. Even though there are single player sections of the game, it is an always online game. But now Ubisoft hasn't just shut down the servers, but revoked licenses, so you can't even launch it. Elsewhere, PlayStation announced that Little Big Planet 3 servers for PS4 will be offline indefinitely. This after the servers were taken offline temporarily due to an exploit that could cause your PSN account, I believe, to be banned. I found that on a forum.
Yeah.
I couldn't find it. I don't think it was an official explanation of what was going on, but I think that's what was going on. Okay.
I never even knew about that Little Big Planet situation.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah,
I didn't know that the servers were going offline temporarily in January till.
Yeah. I heard about that news, but I didn't know about the exploit. I didn't know that there were problems with the servers.
Oh, okay, sure.
But it's incredibly unfortunate because yeah, everything is gone, like your levels that you've uploaded, everything. Which, who knows if those people have kept them on their hard drives mm-hmm. in their save data. And now you can't even, like, whatever you built that you wanted to share with people, you can't. Like, yeah. You just can't. So it's really, really rough. Something like that for me is incredibly rough because people have spent a lot of time creating those.
And that's the whole point of Little Big Planet.
Right.
Was it was sort of Roblox before Roblox was a thing. And Fortnite before Fortnite was a thing, right?
Yeah.
Was Little Big Planet. The majority of Little Big Planet that I experienced, not much, but the majority of it was all
online stuff.
Content creation stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the campaign or anything.
Right.
So that's too bad. And that, yeah, this is a whole area of... We have two cases here for that make great arguments in favor of piracy.
Yeah.
Because if you're not going to take care of your IP, who's going to?
Yeah.
Somebody else has to. And if you're not going to preserve it and respect it, then you're not going to respect the time that people put into mm-hmm. your product and stuff like that. Then yeah. what do you expect them to do but to find ways around it and emulate it? Mm-hmm. And you should just have to put up with that, especially if you're not going to try and monetize it at all. So I know The Crew came out in like 2010 or whatever. It came out a long time ago. Not that long, but a long time ago.
I think 2015.
Yeah. But it still had a lot of people playing it, and it had single player sections. So it's like, why does it need an always online? I don't know. If we're going to do this thing where games have to have always online connections to check for a bunch of bullshit, DRM, whatever, can we not have contingencies in place where if a game has single player? This is a conversation that's been going on forever. And I just don't understand why there aren't solutions for it. There aren't solutions for it because I think the people that empower just have no interest in providing those solutions.
There's also that, and I've tried to explain this to a couple people before, but there is that thought process of there are so few people
yeah.
it would affect that it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
like, shut up. And even then, like I also am a victim too, because when it was like, oh, Crew no longer works, I was like, oh, who cares? Like what lot? Because nobody's playing it. Like, who cares if Destiny 1 servers go down? Because everybody's playing Destiny 2. Nobody's playing Destiny 1, mm-hmm. you know, which is not the correct way to think, because it's gone. It's gone. You can't experience it again. But it is disappointing that I now have to pull all of my copies of the Crew for Xbox One, PS4 off the shelf, throw them away.
Yeah, and there's no way to even check them out.
Yeah, because I've already had returns on them because, oh, you can't play it anymore.
Yeah. It's like,
oh,
which is just sucky.
Yeah.
And we talk about preservation all the time. So much of video game history is lost to the sands of time. And now with online and digital decay, in some ways it's better today because you have all those people out there, all those gods amongst men that are setting up the emulators and taking the time to do preservation, but they're up against just a tidal wave of time, corporate indifference, mm-hmm. and more corporate indifference, yeah. I guess. Yeah. And that's too bad. And they're up against the law, because American copyright law and other bullshit like that isn't in favor of the people that are trying to preserve, especially not even the people who are strictly doing it from an academic sense, uh-huh. right? Libraries and whatever.
Yeah.
We'll have Frank Cifaldi on the show next week.
Right.
Internet
Archive next week.
Yeah. The laws are up against them, right? So it's like, what do you leave people to do? Yeah. And I think especially Helldivers is a different case because it was just bad servers. The game is still available. You can play it. But I just think if we got to have solutions to that. I don't know. If we're doing all digital, if we want a future where we're streaming games all the time, you got to have a way that this stuff is saved, or else there's going to be a bunch that's lost. It makes me think about like the future of Fortnite and Roblox. Think right. of all the stuff that's been created there and all the communities that have been built in those games. And those games aren't going to be around forever unless one of them becomes Skynet. Other than that, they're going to go away eventually. So it's like, what's going to be done to preserve that? Nothing, probably. And that's right. really too bad, especially for all the kids that are growing up mainly playing those things, and it's just not going to be preserved at all. And yeah, and you know, and this isn't a response to you specifically, but I think a lot of people do have that initial thought of like, well, why does the Crew matter? And it's like, well, it matters because it was a creation. It yeah. was a piece of video game history, a small mm-hmm. one. And, you know, if you're a YouTuber out there, or not even a YouTuber, what if you're somebody who wants to write a book about the history of racing games? Well, now you can't really study the Crew, because how do you play it?
Yes.
You can only play the Crew 2. Mm-hmm. So if you're writing that book, which that book has the right to exist.
Yeah.
There are books out there that's like the history of switch hitters between 1887 and 1920, right?
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of footage and all kinds of bullshit about switch hitters between 1887 and 1920. But it's like, and nobody would bat an eye at that because everybody thinks baseball is like a legitimate thing. But if we talk about video games, it's like, oh, it's just a video game. Who cares? Yeah, but it's right, no, it's history, damn it.
Yeah.
And if people, if someone wants to study it, the history, if developers want to study it as part of like a, I don't know, a looking at how games were developed or the philosophies behind them or whatever, they should be preserved. Just like any other movie from the 1920s that or 30s that people study today to learn about the history of film, you know. Anyway, I'm preaching to the choir here.
Sorry.
All right. One other quick note here, and then we'll get on. I know we've gone long. Dead Space is now on hold. This is according to Bloomberg's Jason Schreier. Well, the news became public last week. You know what? Do I?
Jason
Schreier.
Yeah. There it is. Well, the news became public last week. EA made the decision, I guess, as far as last spring. The possibility of a new Dead Space game was derailed after sales of the remake didn't meet company expectations. Schreier tweeted out that the chief hope was for a new Dead Space game, not necessarily a remake of Dead Space 2, but neither materialized. That doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. Because Dead Space 2 was the better game?
Yeah.
So it's like, the remake of Dead Space was to set up the remake of the better Dead Space.
what I would like to happen is remake one, remake two, and then just make a new three.
Exactly, yes.
Make a new three.
Yes. Don't remake three. Yeah. Just revamp three, completely different thing. You are correct, sir. Yeah, and that's not going to happen. I do wonder how realistic those sales expectations. I want to see the numbers. I want to see the economics.
I would like to see the numbers too, because I don't know for sure. And I'm just a small video game store locations.
It's simple work, but it's fair.
I can tell you, I haven't seen that game very much actually.
When I bought it used, so maybe I'm part of the problem. But in all the GameStops and yeah. Fallout games, there was only one used copy of Dead Space. Now, either that's because everybody yanked it because it wasn't selling, or everybody sold it and nobody gave it back. Yeah. I don't know. So
I don't know either. Yeah.
That was the only, and it was a GameStop way up in like.
I have just the person we can call. We'll have him on next week, Matt Piscatella.
Matt Piscatella. We'll talk with Matty Ice on it. speed dial. So I wonder what those expectations were.
Yeah.
Because company expectations can sometimes be completely bullshit.
Of course.
So what's the deal there? I want to know the economics behind it. And like, how expensive was the game to make? And did it need to be that expensive? They did some new story elements. I don't know. But I'm speculating here, because the main point is it didn't meet sales expectations. Okay, EA. By how much, how bad were the losses, and what were your expectations Square Enix expectations? Because then it's your expectations that are the problem.
Yeah.
And just because I'm a cynic, I'm going to assume it was the expectations that were the problem.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe the game didn't turn. I have no idea.
I don't know either, unfortunately.
It's weird that they would do a new Dead Space. That would be a weird thing. Like, as opposed to just remaking Dead Space 2, it would be weird to imagine if they remade Resident Evil 2 and then they're like, okay, now we're doing a different Resident Evil altogether. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, Resident Evil 3 was there. Resident Evil 3 walked, so Resident Evil 4 remake could fly, baby.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay. Are we, was there anything else you want to say about this?
No, it sucks because I would love to see. I didn't play the remake, and not that I don't want to, I do, but I prefer to. Like to play two, so I was hoping for a remake of Dead Space 2.
I have a physical copy, I think, if you'd like to borrow it
one day
for PS5.
One day.
So if you're
as soon as I'm done with like other stuff that I am like trying to work on.
Yeah, well, guess what? 6 months from now, I'm gonna be playing a game and I'm going to hit on my PlayStation. I'm going to see your name and I'm going to see Genshin Impact. And I'm going to see son of a
after,
bitch.
After,
that son of a bitch.
Yeah, probably. After after Stellar Blade comes out, there's nothing the rest of we have no news of anything about the next halfway.
And Star Wars Outlaws, which is
October? I'll probably play that. Yeah.
October, I think. I don't know. Yeah, I'm hoping that there aren't any Summer Games Fest comes around and Jeff Keighley's like, yo, everybody, 6 game announcements releasing next week. Yeah. Please don't do that, Jeff. I need those because I need to finish fucking a couple games.
I got.
They're smaller
more
games
than a plate.
I need to finish.
I got a plate full of fresh food, and then I have like rotting food in my fridge I need to get to from like years ago.
Yeah, you got to eat it before it rots. Yeah. It's like on the verge of rotting.
It's like wine. It gets better with age.
And then I need to go back to Cyberpunk too, because apparently it's a so completely good. Different
well,
game.
Well, I got to finish Cyberpunk.
And Phantom Liberty, which apparently is really good. So I never finished it, so I need to go back. And now we need to replay Fallout New Vegas. Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay, we'll hit the tidbits as soon as I find where the tidbit sounder is.
Did you not name it tidbits?
What if I told you,
I got it.
In this world, there are bits and there are tids. And Richard is the only man who can put them together into tidbits.
I only got three tidbits, and I'm going to make these quick because we don't got much time here. Daniel Muster, the former Fortnite boss, has revealed to us the reason why Nintendo's never had a crossover with Fortnite. And we already had some of this information from the Epic lawsuit with Apple, but my Daniel Mustard has confirmed that they originally wanted Samus from Metroid inside of Fortnite as a crossover skin. However, Nintendo was open to the idea only if Samus would only appear on Switch consoles.
Oh, okay.
So if the image and like character of Samus appeared in like Master Chief, you could have bought him on PS4 Fortnite, you know, and then and Kratos on Xbox Fortnite, you know, whatever. But if Samus was available on any other console, they said no.
Good old Nintendo.
Good old Nintendo.
Is that Stephen Totilo? Because I know, I think it's Donald Mustard, right? Is it Donald Mustard?
Is it Donald Mustard? I'm sorry, Daniel Mustard, but. This is also brought forth old news. Back in 2008, Luke Plunkett had an article, and I forgot about this. I remember this. But Samus and Link were going to be available in Marvel Ultimate Alliance for the Wii.
Oh, really?
And they actually had them inside. They're still, you can probably find the video on YouTube, but they do have the video of them in the game, like you play, and they brought it to Nintendo to kind of like sweeten the pot. But Nintendo declined. I don't know exactly what happened, but I did hear the original story a long time ago was that they saw Nintendo, when they were watching the video, saw the prompts for like buttons, and it was PlayStation prompts because they didn't like program it yet. Mm-hmm. And they were like, no. that's what I heard. But
oh, man, it's too bad.
It is too bad.
What could have been?
Talking about series being on hold, a leaker, a Ubisoft, dedicated Ubisoft leaker who's reliable, has come out and said that the Watch Dogs series is done. Claims that the series is dead and buried following Watch Dogs Legions, which led to more than one project using the Watch Dogs IP to be canned, including a Battle Royale game, which, if I think about it a little bit, that probably might have been cool.
Maybe. I just can't.
I don't want it. But I did play Watch Dogs 2's multiplayer a little bit, and like being sneaky in the city while trying to hunt down other people and like hacking, like trying to hack each other yeah. was pretty rad.
Yeah, Watch Dogs 2, I remember hearing good things. I remember hearing decent things about Watch Dogs Legion. I just hate Ubisoft. I just dislike Yves Chamolt so much.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know.
Legion was like good and bad.
I remember you talking about it and liking some things.
Gameplay was great. Story was terrible. but I do appreciate the like switching characters, getting to be anybody, but I don't think of Watch Dogs. I don't think it worked with Watch Dogs.
Okay.
It was just really weird with like like you're DedSec, you're doing all this crap, and it's like, I'm gonna recruit you, old lady, and then the old lady in the cutscene is just like, I know literally everything that's going down. I know all of this tech lingo. I know all of this, like, and it's just like, oh, okay. It's really weird. Anyways, last tidbit, very quick. Helldivers 2 is, Sony is in preliminary talks, apparently, to bring Helldivers 2 to Xbox.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, preliminary talks.
Ooh, where is this from?
I don't know, online.
Online? Okay.
Online.
I'm curious as to who got that scoop.
Let me see.
Because that's interesting. Because that Phil Spencer wants that. And if Sony did that, I wonder, because Arrowhead is still independent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
they're not a Sony
mm-hmm,
studio. Mm-hmm. I wonder.
The root. Grain of salt.
Grain of salt. Okay, yeah. Sure.
It's coming from an Xbox person.
Okay.
Grain of salt.
So maybe out of desperation. But anyway, maybe. just for fun speculation.
Funsies.
For fun. That would be interesting because PlayStation's already, already dipped their toe into the PC waters. And
they like it.
And they like it.
Ghost of Tsushima.
They kissed a girl they like it. They tasted PC's cherry chapstick. Yeah, and now they're like, what about some Xbox action? Why don't we try a little bit of this out?
Did you see the Ghost of Tsushima leaks for the PC version?
I did.
So it has like PlayStation overlays and stuff like that. So yeah, no, they're really liking PC, it appears.
Yeah.
It's not something that I... Nintendo, when it came to the Fortnite thing, in my opinion, had nothing to lose.
But that's Nintendo. Yeah.
But that's Nintendo.
But they don't give a shit.
Like, if some PlayStation guy was like, who's this Samus person? This is pretty cool. I might go buy a Switch. Like, you know, yeah. I don't necessarily see this happening for like if Gears of War came to like PS4, I'm sure there would be some PS4 or PlayStation, sorry, PS5, whatever. I'm sure there would be some PlayStation people who are just like, this is a pretty cool IP from Xbox. Do they have anything else? Let me go get an Xbox, mm-hmm. a cheap Xbox or whatever. I don't know. And more money, you know?
Yeah, because it's not, side. Again, with Xbox's philosophy, again, it's platform agnostic. It's not about selling Xboxes.
Uh-huh.
PlayStation is still about selling PlayStations, but they also know they have a huge potential in the secondary market. And Nintendo is all about selling those Switches. It's all about promoting their brands. Now their brands are multimedia because the Mario movie was a big success, so they're trying to figure that out. And wasn't there a Link TV show?
There's a Zelda movie coming out.
Yeah. I remembered something vaguely. So it's like they're trying to expand that, and they have a theme park and stuff or whatever.
When it comes to games, Sony and Microsoft don't have anything to lose dropping consoles because they don't make money off consoles. They lose money. Nintendo is, I think, until the Switch... They made money off consoles a little bit. Well, yes, because they're always low tech when they come in. So, but I think the Switch they are losing money on Switch. But they make their money from the games, and they make the money from accessories.
Yep, Amiibo.
Yeah, and that's all of them: Sony, Xbox, Nintendo. So, yeah, why not focus on making games and having them all consoles get a cut of the pie?
I don't.
One console future, baby.
I think, PC. Yeah, I think in our lifetimes it's possible we'll see. You can officially play a Legend of Zelda game on PC.
Yeah, it's called Tunic.
I mean, something. You know what I mean, man?
Yeah,
you
know
what
I mean? No,
I think it's probably possible in our lifetime.
I think so.
Maybe end of our lifetimes. So maybe. If climate change doesn't wipe us out by like 2035, we've got a good shot at seeing Zelda and Link on a PC. So. Good for us. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, patreon.com/thegamingdiscourse, youtube.com/thegamingdiscourse, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.